Okay, wonderful, wonderful show. No joke ahead for you guys. The Hobby Lobby folks are good Christians. I know that because they went to court defending their Christianity. Except they apparently forgot one of the commandments. Although they would like to apparently probably steal it if they could. That fun story is in the second hour. You're gonna love it. I got a bunch of great stories in the second hour for you guys. Can't wait to get to that. First hour is also wonderful, including Ted Cruz. Just when you thought he couldn't get any more heartless, he's like, no, I can top it. Okay, when you thought Ted Cruz being more vicious than he already is, inconceivable. He said, you might not understand the meaning of that word. That's a Princess Bride allusion for Ted Cruz, who I know enjoys Princess Bride. Okay, so that's later in the program, and that's gonna be nothing but fun. Of course, you get the entire program, especially this month. You crazy dog? We got free membership, free for a whole month. Is this well advised? I don't know. But it's happening nonetheless. TYTnetwork.com/join. Enter promo code FREETYT, get a full month of TYT membership, get the whole show, the entirety of the show, anytime you want it, download it, stream it, audio, video, no ads, post games. We got aggressive progressive tonight, we had old school last night. All those wonderful things, all free for 1 month, try it out right now, TYTnetwork.com/join, promo code FREETYT. Okay, let's get started. Okay. So there's a lot of hand-wringing about the media, and are they balanced enough? Are they creating more division? Are they fake? Are they not fake? So Walter Isaacson, who was former CNN chairman and CEO, and very respected in the community and in the industry, now at the Aspen Institute, is on Bloomberg Television. He's going to talk about it. I think he is half right, but I also think that he leaves out a huge part which makes him half wrong. So first, let's watch.
About the fracturing of journalism. Talk to us a little bit about how you see Fox's role here in perhaps smoothing some of the divides in the country or exacerbating them.
Oh yeah, I think that's definitely true that the divides in our country have been exacerbated by all forms of media, whether it's in the blogosphere or on cable news, people getting more and more partisan.
So now the half that's true is obvious. So you know, in the beginning there was the, well actually, it depends on what you mean by the beginning. In the modern era, there was the Walter Cronkites, etc. And the idea was that the news was supposed to be objective. Now, that's not really that true. Edward R. Murrow, one of the legends of news, was clearly opinionated, had a perspective, shared it on air. Walter Cronkite actually was, his most famous moments are when he said Vietnam, we weren't winning and we weren't headed in the right direction. That is an opinion. And when he cried over JFK being shot, very understandable, but a moment of emotion and passion. So I think that even the past has been judged in a way that's not really accurate, let alone the fact that if you go further back to the foundation of this country, the press actually used to be deeply partisan and far more vicious than it is today. So that's a fact, and you can go check that out as well. But in the modern era, there was the thought that there is objectivity, and oftentimes, by the way, delivered by organizations like Associated Press, Reuters, McClatchy Newspapers does a wonderful job with it. I think The Guardian does, Intercept, etc. But it got warped at some point to mean balance or neutrality instead of objectivity. So then they just said, well, the Republicans say this and Democrats say that. And look, the organization that he ran, CNN, was the most responsible, in my opinion, for that kind of false equivalency. So is there more partisanship now? Yes, then Fox News comes, they're deeply partisan. And then online, it's very clear Breitbart's on the right, and Glenn Beck's on the right. There are many blogs on the left, and obviously we're very clear about our perspective, and we are progressive. So I think that at least there's more honesty online, where people clearly label their perspective. And you know, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. I think CNN and the rest of the established media also have a perspective. They have an establishment perspective and an establishment bias, which they do not clearly label. That is why they see some on the left and the right as fringe and not acceptable, and they're outside of the you know, the range of acceptable opinion according to the grand poobahs who run CNN, etc. So, but is it more partisan? Yes, I will grant him that that is half true. Let's watch a little bit more so I can tell you what I think is actually the number one problem here.
If you know people could step back from that, and I don't just put Fox in the category, but I put everybody in the category, including all of us. If we could step back from having knee-jerk partisan reactions, that would be good.
Yes and no. So if you are having a partisan reaction and you say, well, the Democrats are right no matter what, then that's useless. And nobody online is interested in that, by the way. Or if you say the Republican Party is always right, oh, of course, that's useless. And people online, I think, are far more sophisticated than TV viewers. And they don't fall into the normal team play. My family's always been a Democratic family. My family's always been a Republican. I'm on team Republican or Democrat. So now, are there also people online that are not more sophisticated? Of course, I know that too. But generally speaking, I don't know that there is a show with a deeper connection to the online audience than we have. Tens of thousands of comments every day. And I can tell you right now that the viewers online do not like partisanship. On the other hand, they want you to be honest and clear with your perspective. Again, I think we deliver on that. And to be fair to Breitbart, it's clear what their perspective is and many of the right-wing blogs and left-wing blogs. But what I think that Walter Isaacson is getting wrong there is that he thinks, well, that means we call it down the middle. No. And I hope I'm not putting words into his mouth, but I have seen this time and time again, and in the context of that interview, it certainly appeared that he was saying that. If you then say, since I don't want to be partisan, I'm going to say what the Republicans are doing and the Democrats are doing are equal. No, but that's not true. That's not objectively true. So I can give you many examples. I'll give you one. The number of filibusters that the Republicans did doubled or nearly tripled the previous record of filibusters. So, and by the way, that's undercounting. If you look at just strictly the numbers of filibusters, I think it's around double. But if you see that the Democrats actually did not force them into filibusters on many other issues that they could have, it would have gone way past that number. So who was more obstructionist? Well, there is a literal answer to that question, and it was the Republican Party. Now, if you say today the Democrats are obstructing Republicans' plans, that's fair. But I'm not sure you should call it even there either. The Democrats are looking to block Trump's agenda, hence they are more obstructionist. But don't call it even if it isn't even. And so in reality now, and here's what you'll never hear in the establishment press, partly because of the opinions of Isaacson and others that would consider it unduly partisan. One party is playing by Queensbury rules. I mean, when Ossoff lost, he had banners in the background saying humility. What kind of a political slogan is humility? On one side, they got kids gloves on. On the other side, they are proud. I mean, you go look at all the work. And Roger Stone's not hiding it. He's so proud of all of his lies and deceptions and tricks, and he brags about it to anyone who'll see it. And now roundly acknowledges the person who got Donald Trump to run, and a lot of his campaign was based on Roger Stone tactics. And it is a proven fact how many times Donald Trump lies. He lies within the same sentence. If you call that even, you have done a great disservice to journalism. So if you say, well, look, we don't want to seem too partisan, so I will say I can't tell the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Well, that's not journalism. And you've hurt the idea of the media and the press. So which plan covers more people? Obamacare has a lot of issues with it. We talked about the issues when they were passing it. I don't think it controls prices nearly well enough. But does it cover more people? Absolutely. Will senior citizens pay more under this new healthcare proposal? Absolutely. Sometimes three times more than they used to pay. Sometimes four times more than they used to pay. By the way, it's also fair to say some young and healthy people will pay less under the Republican plan. And then you talk about a trade-off. The Republicans give a giant, about $700 billion tax cut to the rich. That's a fact. That's a fact. Don't be afraid to say it. And 23 million people will lose their insurance, and senior citizens will pay a lot more. On the other hand, rich people get more tax cuts, and younger and more healthier people will pay a little bit less for their insurance. But on places like CNN, they are so afraid to say it because then Donald Trump and everybody will say, oh, you're on the liberal media, you're your side, you're being partisan, fake news, all that stuff. No, lay out the facts no matter where they fall. And I think they are so scared to be called partisan that that is not what they're doing today. That's the real problem with the establishment media today. Okay, so now let's go to other issues with the media and how that plays out. So last October, AT&T offered to buy Time Warner for only $85 billion. So that's obviously a giant merger. It has to get, in a sense, approved by the federal government. And I talk about this all the time, that there are these parent corporations that run a lot of these media organizations, and CNN is under Time Warner, which if the merger is approved would be under AT&T. Well, they care a lot more about some of the approvals that are going to happen than they care about necessarily the ratings of one of your channels in that giant media organization. And some of those organizations, their parent corporations, aren't even media. So in the case of Time Warner, they largely are a media company. In the old days when GE used to own NBC, they're largely defense contractors. They had other lines of business as well, but their biggest was defense contractor. So they were making money in other ways. They needed media both for a profit center, but also for marketing purposes. So that's reality, and when you mention that, sometimes people go, oh no, corporate interest and billions of dollars on the line, that would never affect anyone's decision. How dare you? Well, the one good thing about the Trump era is that they're a little bit more brazen in their corruption, so it leads to a tiny bit more honesty, whether it's accidental or not. So in this case, the Trump administration is saying, yeah, we might take politics into account in how we evaluate this merger. Now, they're not technically supposed to, but I got news for you guys. And by the way, if you're in the mainstream media, I hope you're sitting, because you're gonna be shocked and chagrined when I tell you that under old administrations, yes, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, Republicans and Democrats alike, they considered your politics when they were considering mergers, and they considered donations. I know that they will say until they're blue in the face, oh, how dare you? Are you challenging the nobility of these honorable gentlemen? My answer to that is yes, I am. I believe that of course it was relevant. And of course, look, when I was at MSNBC and I was a host there, I was told over and over again, and that is why I left, that I had to know who the home team was. The home team apparently was the Democratic Party. Why? Comcast, the largest media organization in the world, is run by a bunch of liberals? No, that is not the reason why. Because at that time, the Obama administration was the ones that got to decide, are mergers for Comcast going to get approved? Are we gonna have net neutrality? Are we not gonna have net neutrality? Those are multi-billion dollar decisions. Oh, how is your ratings at 6 o'clock on MSNBC? Pa-ting, who cares? Again, in the Trump era, since they can't contain themselves, they're just more blatant about it. So that brings us to a report from the New York Times. They explain that White House advisors have discussed a potential point of leverage over their adversary, a senior administration official said. A pending merger between CNN's parent company Time Warner and AT&T. Mr. Trump's Justice Department will decide whether to approve the merger. And while analysts say there is little to stop the deal from moving forward, the president's animus towards CNN remains a wild card. Drops. Okay, so there you have some significant drama. Now, for whoever at the White House is leaking that, is obviously means to do one thing, which is to intimidate CNN. Two, they might be that might be a very real threat. Now, previous administrations were sophisticated enough not to leak that to the press, because it then triggers several different things. Number one, it's technically illegal to do that. The Department of Justice doesn't approve the merger. It can try to block the merger and ask for an injunction. But if it does, they go to court, and the court can then see, did you block it because you thought it limited competition for legitimate reasons, or did you block it for illegitimate reasons like political reasons? Well, if you told the New York Times you did it for political reasons, that might not help your cause. Plus, you don't want to raise your hand and say, I'm doing something kind of illegal here, right? Or we're threatening to do something illegal. I guarantee you the Obama administration would not have been that unsophisticated, no matter what they actually did in reality. So now CNN gets to say, we would never take this into consideration. But Mediaite reports, it had recently been reported that AT&T might be looking to neutralize CNN President Jeff Zucker as part of the merger, with options ranging from firing him to kicking him upstairs to a corporate executive job with no real input at CNN. And that's how this game is played. Now, today Jeff Zucker is out there going, no way, they wouldn't do this. If you say so, Jeff. Okay, but as you know, sometimes that is exactly how it goes down. And that would be sophisticated of Time Warner not to fire Jeff Zucker, but to give him a promotion where he gets more money. At MSNBC, I was offered more money, but I was offered to move from primetime to the weekends where less people see you. So Jeff, you might get more money and a promotion, but you're going to go to an office where nobody's ever going to hear from you again. Now that is one of the possibilities. Now that it's more out in the open, it's harder to execute. So, and it forces CNN to say, no way. And it puts Zucker, I think, in some ways in a better position. Because if you do it now, it'll seem fairly obvious. Look, we're having this conversation right now, so everybody knows about it. So who knows who leaked it? But I'll tell you this much. Does that happen in all of these administrations where they say, hey, if you play ball, usually far more subtly than the Trump administration has said it in this instance, then we'll maybe approve your mergers. And if you don't, and you rock the boat, then maybe your merger doesn't get approved. In this case, they're brazen. It's potentially illegal. But are they going to take that into account when they make their decision? Of course they are. Of course they are. And hence why mainstream media cares about access. Does it really matter to have a boring Republican or Democratic congressman or senator on television? No, that doesn't help your ratings at all. I know, I was there. The ratings don't go up, they go down when you have a boring politician on. You don't need access for better ratings. You need access for things like government merger approval. So before, I would say those things and people in the mainstream would shake their heads and go, oh, corporations and politicians caring about billions of dollars. Cenk, that's so uncouth of you to say. Now, the Trump administration has made it public. They're saying, of course we care about that money, and that is a tool that we use to control the press. Now you know at least. Okay, now let's go to Missouri. Well, we had good news in St. Louis, Missouri. They raised the minimum wage recently, went up to $10. Look, I think it should be at 15. It's a good first step though. And in 2018, it was going to go to $11. Wait a minute, why did I just say it was going to go to 11? Because there's no good news that can last in this country. What do you think, we live in a democracy? So we go to the Huffington Post now, Dave Jamieson writing and explaining. After St. Louis leaders raised the wage floor for workers within city limits, the state GOP recently passed what's known as a statewide preemption law, forbidding localities from taking such matters into their own hands. On Friday, Missouri Governor Eric Greitens said he would let the law go into effect, thereby barring cities and counties from setting a minimum wage higher than the state level. See what they did there? Oh, St. Louis, you want to pay your workers more? Nah, I don't think so. We're preempting your act of decency with an act of gross cruelty. Now, the governor in this case is a Republican and didn't have the guts to actually just sign the law. He let it go into effect without signing it. Why did he do that? Because he knows that people are going to be furious. Now, I'll give you the full context of how devastating this is to the working poor and middle class. Remember, they're working. You don't get the minimum wage if you're a bum and you're not working. So all the propaganda they do against poor people and middle class people, it's nonsense. They work really, really hard. So here's what happened. For low wage earners in St. Louis itself, the new law will have a startling consequence. It will actually push the minimum wage back down from the city approved $10 per hour to the state approved $7.70. The downgrade is slated to take effect on August 28th. Let's talk about how devastating that is. As a percentage of their income, for someone earning the bare minimum, that's a potential cut of 23%. They're giving tax cuts like it's no one's business. to the highest income earners in the country. The average person in the top 1%, not from the tax cuts that's coming next, but just from the tax cuts within healthcare reform, those are the smaller tax cuts, are going to get about, I think, $35,000 per household in the top 1%. They're going to get an extra $35,000 per household. The numbers get astronomical when you get to the higher brackets. I think that the 400 richest people are going to get like an extra $7 million a year from the tax cuts just inside healthcare reform. Then the larger tax cuts and tax reform comes. But when it comes to the poor and middle class that are working, they're going to cut your wages in St. Louis by a quarter. It's not like you were getting rich off of $10 an hour. You could barely survive on $10 an hour. And then they're going to cut it by a quarter. And then meanwhile, when they do the tax cuts for the rich, you know what they tell you? Oh, that's not for the rich, that's for you guys, so that it could trickle down on you. How about instead of trickling down on me, you let me keep a $10 minimum wage, which doesn't even pay the bills. It barely allows you to survive. No, don't worry, I'm going to give it all to the rich, and eventually, maybe, it'll trickle down to you, but meanwhile, I'm going to take your money. And by the way, where does that go? Well, why do you think they're passing the law? Well, because their donors told them to pass the law. What donors? The employers who say, look, I'd rather have my executives make more money. It's not like these businesses aren't profitable. They're almost all incredibly profitable. But no, they have to maximize profit. And in order to maximize profit, who are they going to take it from? They're going to take it from you. So look, if we had a decent democracy in this country, we'd have a $15 minimum wage, we might have one that's even higher. And when businesses do well, that's great, we all win. The businesses win, small businesses, big businesses, the workers, etc. But that's not the system we have. We have a system that allows for legalized bribery, where you can just go to politicians, give them a campaign donations, and they do whatever the hell you want them to. And what has that led to? Gross income inequality. It's not an accident. This is how it happens. They cut your wages, and they give tax cuts to the rich. And then they go, oh golly gee, I think that's the market. That's not the market. That's you buying off politicians and destroying people who are working for a living. And you think it's just in St. Louis? No, no, no. At least 17 states have preemption laws that stand in the way of local minimum wage legislation, according to a recent study by the National League of Cities. They did it in Birmingham too. In Birmingham, the NAACP is now filing a civil rights lawsuit because Birmingham is 73% African American. They raised the minimum wage to $10.10. Again, not a huge number, and has not kept up with inflation at all. Has not kept up with the productivity of the American worker at all. You're still not getting anywhere near what you should at $10.10. But Alabama didn't like that Birmingham was getting a higher wage. So the state of Alabama comes in and goes, nah, I'm going to take that higher minimum wage away, just like they did in Missouri. Look, what can you do about it? You got to get money out of politics. So wolf-pack.com. If you don't do that, they're going to do this to you forever. You got to stand up and fight so that when you actually do work your ass off, you can actually get a decent wage for it and feed your family. Okay, wolf-pack.com, get money out of politics. Volunteer, help however you can help. The second way is, if you don't have real Democrats, real progressives representing you, the Democrats are going to get steamrolled every time. So in St. Louis, there's a person running for Congress who says the minimum wage should be way higher. She's a Justice Democrat, her name is Cori Bush. And if you want strong fighters who actually fight for you, she doesn't take any PAC money. That's, if you're a Justice Democrat, you're not allowed to take PAC money, you're not allowed to take corporate money. You only small donors. That way you know that she's representing you and not the donors. So why is she for a higher minimum wage? Because nobody bought her off so that she would be for a lower minimum wage and pretend that she's actually doing it for you. She doesn't have to pretend to do anything. So go read more about her, go to votecoribush.com. And if you want to help her with the small donations, votecoribush.com/donate. But look, if you're in Birmingham, do likewise. If you're in any of those 17 areas, do likewise. Don't let them sit there and take money from your family and just let them get away with it. Fight back the way you're supposed to in this system. Fight back through democracy, through politics, regain that power. That is why they are so scared of organizations like Justice Democrats and Our Revolution and all these people that are actually fighting back to get real change. And they're not going to give it to you if you ask pretty please. You have to take it back. The way you do that is by supporting candidates and groups like this, so we get money out of politics so that they represent voters and not donors. Okay, now let me go to, speaking of which, let me go to Nancy Pelosi. Okay. So, Republicans have been running ad after ad in every one of the special elections saying if, for example, John Ossoff wins, Nancy Pelosi wins. Now, I think there has been a great misinterpretation of why they're doing that and why it is successful and how the Democrats should respond. Some Democrats, very justifiably, have said maybe Nancy Pelosi is hurting our cause and not helping. Now, this reminds me of when we said the same about Hillary Clinton, and everybody said, no, 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 Hillary Clinton doesn't have any problems, but the people love Hillary Clinton. How'd that turn out? So, the people that are saying the opposite, that are saying that Nancy Pelosi is wonderful and helping, are, of course, people like Nancy Pelosi and all of her allies that she got money to. Anyway, so right after the Trump election, when she was asked about whether people want a new direction in the Democratic Party, since they just lost to Donald F. and Trump, and they lost the House and the Senate, let alone 69 out of the 99 state legislatures. I mean, you almost can't get a worse record of a failure. She said, quote, I don't think people want a new direction. Really? Well, they have a funny way of showing it. So the evidence would seem to indicate they really, really want a new direction. Okay, now after the Ossoff loss, of course, Democrats declared moral victory, but actual failure yet again. They asked Pelosi again, is it time to step down? Here's her responses, quote, I think I'm worth the trouble. Well, okay, I know, we're supposed to be with you. I'm with her. I am worth the trouble. I am worth the trouble. Why? Why are we going through the trouble just for you? Again, I do have an answer I'll share with you in a second. And then she says these incredibly haughty things like this. Everybody wants leaders, not a lot of people want to be led. People should know when they're defeated. Yeah, I understand. Oh, please, Nancy Pelosi, lead me, lead me. I don't know what to do. No, but you see, Representative Pelosi, we're asking you to not lead us. I think you're misunderstanding the message. Okay. But why should you stay, Representative Pelosi? She says, quote, I'm a master legislator. I don't know if she knows how funny that sounds. By the way, master legislator, what have you brought to us in progressive victories? I'll wait. Progressive victories, master legislator, you lost the fight for keeping us out of Iraq spectacularly. You lost the fight to give tax cuts to the rich under George W. Bush. You lost almost every fight under George W. Bush. Where's the master legislator? Maybe I'm missing it. And then under Obama, well, we did get one thing passed, Obamacare, which they're now destroying. I'm a master legislator. Well, if you see, for example, she'll say, and we're going to talk more about it in a second, oh, I've always been for single payer. I'm not for it now, but I've always been for it. Really? When have you ever fought for it? When have you ever gotten it passed, master legislator? No, you've never gotten it passed. And in fact, during the Obamacare fight, you were among the people who were like, oh, public option. No, that's a bit too much, don't you think? Oh, we have a super majority. But no, let's not do a public option. Hey, hey, look, I didn't call you a master legislator, you did. So that puts the burden on you to prove that somehow you got these legislative victories that were amazing, that were better than expected. Where are those, Representative Pelosi? Because I don't think the American people are seeing them. When asked to further support this, she said, quote, people just flock to support me. Oh my God, I don't think that's your issue. I've got to be honest with you. But again, the same thing as Hillary Clinton, hubris. Hubris on top of hubris. Oh, I am the master legislator. I do declare you have to be with me. Flock to support me, everybody. Jesus Christ. And why does she believe these insane things that nobody else in the country believes? Every Republican runs ads against Nancy Pelosi. Do you think that's because they think Nancy Pelosi is really popular? No, they run those ads because they think Nancy Pelosi is really unpopular. But in her circle, she's got a bunch of sycophants around her who are like, oh yes, Nancy, absolutely, Nancy. You are the most master legislator we've ever seen, Nancy. So here's Emmanuel Cleaver, who says, look, Cleaver has upsides too, and all these people are complicated, got upsides, downsides. But in this case, he has this incredibly annoying quote of, nobody pushed Michael Jordan into retirement. Michael Jordan won things. He won 6 championships. Where are our championships? I mean, first of all, you don't have the House. You were Speaker of the House, you're not the Speaker of the House. Therefore, you did not win, you lost, okay? But that's not the point. The point is legislative victories, policy victories. I'm still waiting for them. If this is the best they got, then you gotta step aside right now. If you think this is winning, and you think this is a wonderful example of legislating these last 20 years, you gotta go right now. You gotta go this minute. Because if this is the best we can do, that is an incredibly low bar. Then I can't have that person content with failure, filled with hubris, having all these sycophants around her going, oh, you're Michael Jordan, Nancy Pelosi, don't worry about it. Now, how about policy? Does she plan to win in the future? The answer is no. Let's take single payer as an example. New York Times reports she is resisting calls for House Democrats to run on single payer healthcare coverage and is an unapologetic pragmatist when it comes to those in her ranks who deviate from orthodoxy. You know what that means? That means single payer, we're definitely not doing it. The leader of the Democrats in the House says she promises that she will not do it. How are you gonna win if you promise ahead of time that you're going to quit? And then she says that she is a pragmatist. Well, if you're a pragmatist and it led to victories, and you say, look, I promise you policy victories later, but I'm at least gonna give you legislative victories, electoral victories. Well, where are those? Those don't exist either. I don't know if you know this, Nancy Pelosi, you're not Speaker of the House anymore, because you lost. There is no pragmatism in failure. You can claim pragmatism if you had succeeded, but you have not. But to them, they're like, what do you mean? The money's still flowing in. We're wildly successful. No, you're not. Success is actually getting wins, like in single payer. And here, in this case, you're not only refused to fight, did you notice the end of the sentence? She is going against those ranks who deviate from orthodoxy. So if you deviate from the establishment, that's when Nancy Pelosi's a tiger. That's when the establishment all of a sudden roars its head and goes, how dare you? You will not deviate from orthodoxy. But I'm a master legislator who's gonna give us progressive victories. You just promised us that you won't, that you won't even fight for progressive victories. Okay, when asked why on God's green earth won't you fight on this? Quote from Nancy Pelosi, the comfort level with the broader base of the American people is not there yet. Well, that is factually incorrect, as I'm gonna show you there, but under that logic, Nancy Pelosi, the comfort level of the American people is not with you apparently. So according to your own logic, you should step aside immediately. Okay, but on to single payer, she says the comfort level is not there. A 2016 Gallup poll found that 58% of Americans favored replacing Obamacare with a federally funded healthcare system. That is not going further right, that is going further left. The Washington Post reported April 2017, quote, a recent survey from the economist YouGov found that a majority of Americans support expanding Medicare to provide health insurance to every American. That is Medicare for all. But will you fight on that? No, majority of people are not there. You're wrong. You're factually incorrect. 58% say, yes, I want a government run program. So, and a majority say, yes, I want Medicare for all. Can I be any more specific? But the donors don't want Medicare for all. The donors don't want you to have single payer. So Nancy Pelosi tells you it's not pragmatic. It's not that when you run those ads and you put Nancy Pelosi's picture on it, I'm a guy who does not want to run from any fights. So if I thought that they were attacking her because she's too liberal and that's what was working, I would double down. I'd send in someone even more liberal than her. And I would fight for our ideas. But that's not why it works. It works because they don't associate her with liberal, they associate her with out of touch, elite establishment, and they are right. So, because if they associated her with liberal, they'd say, oh, then Medicare for all, that's a thing I like. That's very progressive. Nancy Pelosi's progressive. I like Nancy Pelosi. That's not the direction they're going in. So what is she good at? And another ally, Steve Cohen, and a guy I like, again, these guys are complicated, from Tennessee, says, this is in favor of Nancy Pelosi, quote, she's good at the wealthier folk. Indeed, indeed. Now we go to the New York Times again. Ms. Pelosi boasting that she was the biggest fundraiser in the country, still in office, dismissed suggestions that her time had passed. And she could not help but note that her critics did not mind benefiting from her financial prowess. That's right, we have a sick, corrupt system where the person who receives the most amount of legalized bribes is considered the leader. And every once in a while, somebody will take a pot shot at Nancy Pelosi, but they still live under the same system and they still like that she funnels some of those legalized bribes to them. So they're like, oh, she's Michael Jordan, she's wonderful, she shouldn't leave, she's good with the wealthier folks. And by the way, the guys I quoted are actually among the better guys. There are much worse guys out there. And so if you, and they're like, oh, well, we might go from Nancy Pelosi to Crowley or to Steny Hoyer. Steny Hoyer isn't any better than Nancy Pelosi. He's just a weak sauce Nancy Pelosi. He's just someone who isn't quite as accomplished in getting quite as many bribes as Nancy Pelosi is. Again, the system allows for it, it's legal. I'm not saying they're doing anything illegal. But when you take all this money and you brag about it, I don't know if you know this, it might leave the impression that you're among the elites and among the corrupt who have filled the swamp with their donors. So it doesn't mean that Trump is right, Trump has made the swamp much worse. But you're not helping by going down the same road and just losing those guys and go, well, they have more money, what could I do? You could change the system, that's what you could do. Oh, but that would be hard. Yeah, I guess we would need a master legislator for that. All right, and they explain the actual numbers. Since entering the House Democratic leadership in 2002, Ms. Pelosi has raised nearly $568 million for her party. Just in 2016 election cycle, she raised over $141 million. Yes, in the old days when nobody noticed the corruption, or they had barely begun to notice the corruption, that would have been a big positive in your column. I'm not unaware of that, I understand that. And these days, we can see you. You can't hide behind TV anymore. There's something called the internet where we can see all these numbers. Okay. Beto O'Rourke, who's one of the good guys, he's a Democrat of Texas, does not take PAC money, does not take corporate money, and he's going to run against Ted Cruz very likely in the Senate in Texas. He says, you can't tell people you're against big money, that you're fighting for the average American, and then spend so much of your time with PACs and corporate interests and the very wealthy. Common sense, that's why Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in the country right now, but the Democratic establishment refuses to see it. And Beto O'Rourke makes a good point. He says, if money were the critical factor, we'd be in the majority right now. If money were the critical factor in presidential races, Hillary Clinton would have won. Yes, Nancy Pelosi, you are right. You have raised more money than anyone else. What you don't realize though, is that used to be an advantage, that is now a significant disadvantage. What it signals and cues the American people is that you're celebrating the corruption. You are not necessarily personally corrupt, but the system has been corrupted. So when you revel in that systemic corruption, people don't see, oh, well, that's a person that's fighting for us. They see a person fighting for their donors, and they're not wrong about that. Now, this is the last thing and very important. They asked Trump voters, and you're gonna say, who cares about Trump voters? No. These are people who voted for Barack Obama and then switched over and voted for Trump. So that's very important. Why did they switch over from Obama to Trump? Now don't tell me it's race. That's a tough to do in that particular category. Now that might have been some segment of that population, but overall these are guys who are discontented with the way things are going. They thought Obama was gonna bring them change, so they're not wedded to Republicans, they're not wedded to white people or evangelicals or anything like that. They just want change, but they felt like they didn't get it, so they went to Trump instead. So when they were asked, what does the Democratic Party stand for? The top three answers were, the 1%, the status quo, and they're for the party themselves and the party. Unfortunately, I think they're correct. So if you can't see the problem that the Democratic Party has, and you can't see the systemic corruption, and you think you're doing a great job amongst all of these electoral losses and an absolute disaster on the policy front, then I'm afraid that you don't understand what's happening in this country at all, and you are definitely not the right person to lead the Democrats out of the wilderness, out of the losses, and actually beat Donald Trump and the Republican Party. You have to understand the voters and how much they hate this corruption in order to be able to beat the Republicans. And if you can't do that, and all you want to do is live in your bubble of hubris, then we got to ask you to step aside. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you. I do want to go through some tweets pretty quickly because they're great. Gabby Morita writes in, the single biggest fundamental flaw in the modern mainstream media is forcing a perspective of false equivalency to every issue. Hear, hear, Gabby. Aaron Hsu says, if money-
Top five, okay.
If Aaron Hsu says, if money would just trickle down anyway, as GOP says, why not just set the minimum wage at $15? I mean, if it'll happen anyway. Aaron, pretty good point.
Bazinga.
I like Aaron's way of debating. Okay, Dana Fairbanks, MD, writes in, Nancy Pelosi is a master fundraiser. That is right. The Mad Lib writes in, Pelosi sounds like Trump. I'm the best legislator. I'm worth it. I'm a master. People flock to me. Dems sad. Are the new conservative. Mad Lib, excellent point. Daniel Pareja writes in, Nancy Pelosi is like Michael Jordan playing baseball.
I get that.
And finally, Tom Zawaki writes in, again, if you're a top fundraiser, you're a leader. If you're a top policymaker, you're rocking the boat.
Ooh,
I like it. I like it. Great tweets, guys. Yeah. Hashtag TYT live to talk to us when the show's live, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. Okay?
It's almost as if some of our audience knows what's going on.
Yes, it's almost as if they're the smartest audience in the world, which they actually are if you look at your level of education.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Yes. Okay, let's turn back to the news. Some people today actually in the news when it comes to the Senate healthcare bill are feeling pretty excited that Mitch McConnell is basically saying without saying that the odds aren't looking good for him. Some people getting very excited. I would say getting ahead of themselves because this thing is not dead. We saw the same thing happen with the House version of Trump Care, so I don't think anyone should get complacent just yet. They are still trying to strike some sort of deal, and they could come back from this resource with one of a variety of different deals. One that we're going to discuss on the show today has been proposed by Senator Ted Cruz. Now, he's one of the senators who hasn't yet signed on to the bill because he doesn't think that it's conservative enough. He doesn't think it does enough to destroy the protections and subsidies set up under the ACA. And so he's got a plan. And there's multiple aspects to it, but we're going to break down the core component, which is this. Under his plan, as long as a health plan offered at least one Obamacare compliant plan in a state, the plan would also be allowed to offer non-Obamacare compliant plans in that state. So what does that mean? Well, that means you could have plans that don't have to allow people with pre-existing conditions on, or plans that don't have to cover certain essential services. Plans that theoretically would allow people with pre-existing conditions but would charge them far more for their health insurance, and that could come in a variety of different forms. But as long as you had that one plan that did things the way they're being done now, you could have all sorts of others. Now, on its surface, I think some people are gonna see that and think, well, that seems kind of reasonable. That way, you know, you can still get health insurance if you have a pre-existing condition, you can go on that one plan. Unfortunately, when you analyze it, it doesn't work out as rosily as Ted Cruz would have you believe. First of all, as the Obamacare markets have the people who need that plan so that they can get insurance go to it, those people necessarily will be more sick than the people who don't choose it, creating effectively high risk pools in those Obamacare markets. So everything we have now would become a de facto high risk pool. Inside of that, premiums would increase. And because those are the plans that would then be subsidized by the taxpayers, more and more money would have to go into those subsidies to keep things at parity right now. And it's likely that Republicans would not be willing to increase the subsidies along the way. But then think about this. What about for the people who still want those plans that actually provide coverage for a variety of essential services? They don't necessarily have a pre-existing condition, anything like that, but they want that plan. Well, those people theoretically are not going to receive subsidies from the government to stay on those plans, although the premiums will continue to rise. And so if you want health insurance that's actually worth something, under Ted Cruz's plan, you would end up spending far, far more.
So he calls this consumer freedom. Okay, so if you have a pre-existing condition, you're no longer guaranteed coverage, so you have the freedom to pay a ton more money. Yeah. If you splinter the different kinds of insurance you can get, so this is the Republican vision of the world, which is everybody in it for themselves. So if you're young and healthy, well, I don't need much insurance, and so you're gonna charge me less. I win. I was already winning, I win even more now, yeah. Right? If you're older or you're sick or you have a pre-existing condition, well, you're gonna get charged much more money because the insurance is gonna say, why would I wanna cover you? You're sick, mm-hmm. right? So if you want insurance, it's gonna cost you more than you could afford.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Freedom. it feels good to be free.
Yeah. So one of the Republican staffers, not a Democrat, a Republican staffer, said CBO, that's the budget office that's independent, nonpartisan, will come back and say the market will be destroyed by this plan and 45 million people will be left without insurance.
Yeah.
Well, look at that, you're free. You're so free you don't even have insurance.
And what you have there with the 45 million is that they have this myth that right now Obamacare is in what they call a death spiral. Now the CBO report that came out evaluating the Senate healthcare plan said that it is not currently in a death spiral. That's simply not true. But this Ted Cruz plan, that is what it would set up. When you segment the market that way and necessarily drive up costs and drive people to plans that don't actually cover anything, which of course leads to more bankruptcies and premature deaths and all of that, you will kill the system. And of course, Ted Cruz wants the entire thing killed. So that's not like an unfortunate consequence that he didn't foresee. That is the end goal for Ted Cruz. And unfortunately, it looks like some Republicans might be behind this. Now, Americans aren't. Americans are strongly supportive of requiring plans to cover everybody no matter their health. That's at 69% approval in a poll from November 2016. This directly goes against that. And at least one GOP aide who's involved in these issues says, I would say that if we voted on the Cruz proposal, it would be in the neighborhood of 37 to 15 against, 37 no votes and 15 yeses, and that's probably generous. But again, do not allow yourself to be disarmed. Those potential no's are worthless if they eventually turn into yeses, and that's why you can't let your guard down.
So, by the way, there's another poll that came out just last month. 77 say it's not important to cover people with pre-existing conditions. It's very important. 77% saying very important. They want you to cover people who have pre-existing conditions. Ted Cruz says no. So who are the people that don't want it covered? Well, it is Republican conservative groups like Freedom Works and Club for Growth. What do they want? They want lower taxes on the rich. So Ted Cruz pretends to be this principled warrior. In reality, here, go to graphic 43. Let me show you who Ted Cruz actually is, okay? This is Ted Cruz. So the reason after saying that he wouldn't support Trump and saying that you should vote your conscience, even in the middle of the convention, he went up phone banking like, okay, I'll leave the words out, but you can see what he looks like there at the end, is because his donors told him, hey, Ted, who the hell do you think you work for? Go and phone bank for Trump, you loser, you pathetic failure. And he did, because he's not a principled person. All he does is carry water for the richest people in the country. So Freedom Works and Club for Growth says your bill, Republicans, is not draconian enough. I need it to be even worse. Yeah. I don't care that 3/4 of Americans want you to cover people with pre-existing conditions. That doesn't give me enough tax cuts, so you will not cover it. Yeah. So right now, what they're doing is negotiating for an even more draconian bill. And I'm with John, don't bet against it. They will, at the end, if I know Republicans, they will all serve their donors. All right, we gotta take a break. We'll be right back with more amazing stuff. Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you guys today. Pete the Rock writes in, some people with pre-existing conditions can't work at all, so why charge more for people with these conditions? It's not just disastrous, it's immoral. To which I say, of course, Last time Ted Cruz cared about morality, hashtag never. Jay writes in, it's almost like they didn't think about this healthcare plan beyond tax cuts.
Almost.
Okay, and the members of the day are William Martin and Stephanie Foster. Thank you for being Young Turks members. You guys support the show and support independent media so we can do the kind of honest reporting that that you see before you, we hope. Okay, what's next?
Yeah, we hope you are going to see a few stories right now. The right wing wants you to believe that it's leftists and Bernie supporters that are responsible for the divisive and extreme and even violent rhetoric that's driving us apart. They tried to make that clear after the Scalise shooting. And this week it looked like they had a perfect example of it. On the morning of June 16th, Morley Elementary School principal Ryan Cleary contacted police in West Hartford, Connecticut after elementary students found, quote, swear words on their playground equipment. Responding officers found kill Trump, left is the best, Bernie Sanders 2020, and death to Trump written on a sign in the playground. Oh my God, case closed. It says Bernie Sanders 2020. These goddamn Bernie bros are at it again. And then they got even more evidence, not just the signs. They had a video footage showing the guy doing it, which we're going to show you right now.
So as you're going to see here, it doesn't like look. Looks can be deceiving, but he doesn't look like a hippie Bernie Sanders supporter so much. But you never know. You never know. But don't worry, we're going to have his exact details for you guys on who he is. But the cops, when they saw a bald white man in a Red Sox T-shirt, they were like, "This is the Bernie bro." Maybe, but let's look into it a little bit more.
So that video came out and a lot of people saw it, including that guy in the video who's Stephen Marks of West Hartford, saw himself and turned himself in because he was rightly scared that he would eventually be caught because they got a very good look at him right there.
Anybody in that community is going to know who he is.
Yeah, and it turns out not such a Bernie bro, he's actually a supporter of Donald Trump. And he told investigators he, quote, had the dumb idea to vandalize the school with what would seem to be liberal hate speech, making this a false flag operation. And oddly enough, the usual false flag people aren't really talking about it. Weird how that works out. He went on to say that his crime was, quote, out of anger towards liberals, and they're breaking major laws every day and being disrespectful towards our government. They're even writing on signs and stuff.
Okay, so let's break this down because this is beyond awesome. So by the way, let's just
Really fast, just because these quotes, two more quotes. He says, on the record, I want to say I'm sorry. It was a stupid decision. I hope nobody wants to do the same because it's wrong. That's good. And then he says, it was just a stupid thing I did at the time. It was stupid, stupid, stupid.
Oh my God, I am totally sorry for that.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
It reminds me of that character from Boogie Nights.
Stupid, stupid, why did you do that? That's not the only one. We've been trying to track down what that's from, but yeah, he did do that.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, yes. There you go.
Okay, and that was not, the audio was not him, but no. It could have been. Okay, so let's break this down. If I was the cops, I would have immediately known that it was a false flag operation. Why? Okay, kill Trump, death to Trump, Bernie Sanders 2020. Like, they're Bernie. Okay.
You're not going to write Bernie 2020.
Okay, first of all, Bernie supporters on average are not the people who are looking to kill people. I know that the right wing says, but that was the one shooting. Remember the one shooting, right? Okay, but it could be. I wouldn't end the investigation there. Okay, then you're stupid enough to write Bernie Sanders 2020 next to kill Trump. It makes it a lot less likely. But the one that's the icing, it's the one that kills it and game completely is left is the best. There's no progressive out there going left to an elementary best. School and like, left is the best. Go, you elementary school right wingers, take that. Okay. No, that's obviously a knucklehead right winger who thinks he's clever. To be fair, there's been false flags on the left too. There's the guy who like burned the black church and it turns out he was going to that church and he wanted to blame it and he did the thing about Donald Trump or whatever. So this
we
happens
reported from, on that.
Yeah, and we report on that. It happens from time to time, but knuckleheads on all sides. But I love the irony of these guys' statements, and this is it is emblematic of the right. He says he did it, as John quoted you, out of anger towards liberals because they're breaking major laws every day. But you broke the law, and you've been now charged with criminal mischief and breach of the peace. And so even as he is admitting he broke the law, he goes, well, they did it. I did it because they did it. But what, you have no graffiti, you have no, in fact, you, since they didn't do it, you had to pretend they did it.
Yeah.
If they had already done it, you wouldn't have to go out there and pretend to do it.
Exactly.
Right? So it is great irony and projection, and they're the lawbreakers.
Yeah.
As he is admitting to a crime.
Yeah, and making his dog his accomplice, which is the worst part for
me. I know. Have you no shame? And finally, the second part of that quote, he says, they're being disrespectful towards our government. Number one, I thought you guys were the ones who hated big government. Now all of a sudden you're charging liberals with the great crime of being disrespectful to our government. Oh my God, a right winger, yeah. Who would have thought? And disrespectful, you wrote fuck all over an elementary school.
And left is the best, which those kids will now say for the rest of their life. Yeah, and look, for the most part, I mean, I wanted to cover this because it's funny. The guy's funny, obviously, but it does matter too, because if it hadn't come out that this guy was actually a Trump supporter, like, do you have any doubt that Fox and Friends wouldn't be showing this and saying, look at these damn leftists? I mean, we're less than a couple of weeks out from them saying that it was leftist rhetoric that led to the shooting at that Virginia baseball field. I mean, we're less than a week from that NRA video saying effectively that because liberals are such big lawbreakers and they're vandalizing things, you should take matters into your own hands, grab a gun, and possibly start shooting people. They're ready to declare civil war because of this idea that we're the violent ones. And here's a guy trying to effectively start that sort of conflict.
So let me do an immediate correction. Fake news, he didn't write fuck. I just realized he didn't. He wrote kill and death. To be fair,
we're fake news.
Okay, and the second clarification is about the dog.
Animals are innocent.
So don't make him a complicit in your crime. In fact, that makes it a conspiracy. There are two things involved there.
Animals are innocent.
Yet,
don't make them go down for a hate crime.
That's right. Yet the guys who cover conspiracies and false flag operations not covering that story. Interesting.
35% chance that one of them is going to say, you guys, you gullible libs, he's a lib. And once he got caught, he decided to say he's a conservative so he could just make us look bad. He was really out there doing it for himself.
Oh, the old double false flag operation.
In his heart, flags. He still thinks left is best.
And animals are innocent. Yeah. All right, let's go forward.
Okay. Donald Trump is currently on his trip to Europe, and he had his big speech in Poland, which I wish we had time to break down because there were some doozies in there. But he's also less than one day out from a major sit-down bilateral meeting with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. And both White House aides and also outside observers, people who know about these sorts of events, have a lot of advice for how he should approach his preparation for this meeting and how he should conduct himself with Vladimir Putin. So Mr. Trump's aides are apparently seeking structure and predictability. They hope that a formal meeting with aides present and an agenda will leave less room for improvisation. And apparently Donald Trump is just going to, he doesn't have a list of like things he wants to cover. He's just going to talk about whatever pops into his head, which is a great way, you know, to meet one of our adversaries. That makes sense. But the reason that the aides are worried about this is that a lot of people believe that Vladimir Putin is very experienced, obviously, both in politics and in intelligence work. He is good at these sorts of meetings. He's good at exerting pressure, manipulating people, seducing people, as they say. At one point, he brought a black lab to a meeting with Angela Merkel, who's afraid of dogs after earlier in her life being bit by one, to sort of put her off her game in the meeting. So I don't know exactly, maybe he's going to bring like a really big pair of gloves to the meeting with Trump. I don't know, but he's going to try to manipulate him in some fashion. But look at their prep, look at what they're doing to get him ready. Aides have written a list of tweet length sentences that summarize the main points Trump could bring up with Putin.
Oh, that's the most embarrassing thing I've ever heard. That's not just embarrassing for Donald Trump, it's embarrassing for all of us. Our leader is a guy who could only read in tweet length sentences. Oh my God, sad baby.
There's some chance that he will say something like, you know what, Putin? I need you to stop intimidating #Ukraine. I mean Ukraine.
No,
like
no,
he honestly, he wouldn't actually stand up for Ukraine. Yeah, no, I mean his prep, like we already know that they have to like say his name over and over to keep him interested in the prep. But now he doesn't, he's given up on the trying to get through the hard material. Like he's gonna take a couple of bullet points and then he honestly thinks that he can just sit down with Vladimir Putin and just shoot the shit. Like Vladimir Putin is gonna come in there with some extremely specific and valuable concessions he's looking to get. In case you don't know, Putin was and is a KGB officer, and KGB officers are specialists at one thing, seduction. This is according to the former US ambassador to Ukraine. Like he knows how to persuade, how to manipulate, and especially how to give him these little compliments that he knows Donald Trump is going to want. God knows what a compliment to Donald Trump can buy someone like Vladimir Putin today.
So Putin obviously not in the KGB anymore because the KGB doesn't exist. He now runs.
He means that he functions right. in that same role. Like
that's
he, it's
right.
not like he has moved on in his life from his position
right.
in that.
So to give you some concrete examples. So there's the dog example, which by the way, if I was Merkel, I would have immediately told my assistant, bring me some snakes. I'm not kidding. Bring me 3 snakes. I don't care if they're poisonous or not poisonous. I'll put it right next to this mother effer. Okay, you gonna bring a dog? All right, I'll bring a snake. You bring a snake, I'll bring a tiger. We'll do it the Chicago way, okay? But don't, you're not gonna intimidate me. Who the hell do you think you are? So getting pushed around by this guy. So, but Putin has done it in both ways. He is, sometimes he cajoles, and I hate the word that we're using the word seduces. Anyway, and in other ways he intimidates, and sometimes he just takes it. As Cersei Lannister once said, you know what else is power? Power is power. So he was with Robert Kraft, the guy who's the owner of the New England Patriots. And he's like, oh, nice Super Bowl ring, can I see it? And he's like, oh, sure. Putin looks at him, puts it in his pocket, walks out. It's now his Super Bowl ring. That's a true story confirmed by Robert Kraft, who is a Trump supporting Republican. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Putin, this is who he is. And yes, he prepares meticulously and works really hard and is going to try to get things from us. And he has a lot of things to work with Donald Trump. Trump thinks, I got this, I already read the tweet length sentences. Remember that he wouldn't read his briefing, so they had to bring it down to a single page with pictures on it. Not joking, those are sources inside the White House that are saying that. And then now the pretty pictures aren't enough, a whole page is too much, we're down to tweet length. Mm-hmm. Like Putin. Bad guy. Oh, okay. Putin, bad guy, maybe. Oh, I don't know. He gives me stuff.
Maybe we could just a couple of GIFs, maybe to illustrate exactly what he should do. But
maybe
yes.
a wrestling video. Do you see?
Maybe.
He's like the Undertaker. So yeah. you get it? He comes in, he's like the bad guy. He's dark and you know, and oh, dark, I get it, right? Bad guy.
But he uses dirty tricks. It's like a street fight basically. So if you get a chair, maybe something wrapped in barbed wire, you can use it. Now there was some advice also given by a former KGB officer who's part of like the resistance now in Russia who said, Trump should be calm, listen to all of Putin's arguments and avoid making any spontaneous decisions. That is not his strong suit. Putin is going to be charming. As to him, Trump is more important than most of his closest cronies. The Kremlin depends on the future relations with USA. They live with Trump on their mind. But he does like making those spontaneous decisions. He can't keep his own attention for the span of a sentence.
So there's two different things going on here to summarize. One is that even Trump, and I say even Trump advisors and aides, but actually, especially Trump advisors and aides who have to work with him every day, realize what a schmuck he is. They're like, don't let him improv anything because he will bungle it. So let's be really tightly produced so that he can't say anything stupid because he is that stupid. We know we work with him every day.
Yeah.
And we will try to explain it to him in bite-sized sentences because the president is a moron and can't read past 140 characters, right? So they know that, the guys who work with him. These are not people who made it up. These are sources inside the White House,
yeah.
okay? So the second part of this is that guys, you're wasting, the guys at the White House, to be fair to them, they're Republicans, I don't like them, I got no love for them at all, okay? But you're wasting your time because they are actually, they sound like they are earnest people trying to get whatever they want, and in their case, it's right-wing policies, some of which I agree with is in favor of US interests, and some of which I don't agree with and is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. But that's, Trump is gonna give Putin what he wants, because they already made a deal. So Trump will go there and go, oh, okay, maybe we should lift the sanctions. Oh, I did that out of improv. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got the tweets wrong. Oops. I'm being fair to those Republicans who work at the White House who I can't stand. You guys don't, very, very, very likely, the overwhelming majority of you have no idea what deal Trump might have made with the Russians already. So you're going in there like trying to explain to him what US interests are. He doesn't give a damn about US interests. Yeah. He gives a damn about Trump interests. So all of this is probably for show. The reality is Putin already played his tricks. He did that before the election and during the election. So he doesn't have to go in there and do any sort of master manipulation when they meet in person.
Yeah,
that mission has already been accomplished.
And two more things. I mean, we're not going to go over Trump's press conference today, but Vladimir Putin has got to be feeling good that Trump once again refused to accept the intelligence community's conclusion that there was Russian interference in the election. So he is thereby helping Russia in their efforts to continue to do this in more and more cases. But in addition, just to summarize, like we have our concerns obviously about some of the people trying to control him, but there's this idea that theoretically they can maybe exert a little bit of influence, people who are a little bit more responsible, a little bit more competent, and some of them might be competent. But when we're talking about an extremely important meeting, the first big sit-down meeting with a small group of one of the big powers around the globe, one of our chief adversaries, these could change based on the list of people, but the list of people who are currently known on the Russian and the US side to be in that room, the Russian officials have 80 plus years of government experience. The US officials that'll be in that room, less than 1 year of government experience for the entire group.
Look, as I said before, the die has already cast, so it doesn't matter that much that what happens in this meeting, but if it did, we'd be doubly screwed.
Yeah.
All right, last quick fun story for you guys.
Okay. During his trip to Poland, Donald Trump did try to reach out to Polish leadership, but it didn't really work out for him. Let's watch.
So this is the leader of Poland, and then no, wrong. His first lady, I don't think so. And then the best, of course, she's actually following etiquette. We'll explain in a second.
Yeah.
best is his look though. Okay, that's the theoretical snub. And then look at the look, look at the look. Oh, yeah, I know how these women are. I know it.
Yeah, it's the wife of the president.
She's supposed to shake the first lady's hand first and then the president's hand. But of course, our president, our commander is schmuck. Didn't get briefed on any of the etiquette when they probably tried to brief him on the etiquette. He's like, who needs etiquette? I got it.
Reach for things. I was going to grab her by the hand. she's not being rude or whatever. She's just shaking. The whole thing doesn't matter, obviously. But his look was just, he's so mad. And what I think it actually is partially it's not knowing the etiquette, but it's partially that I don't think he even considered the possibility that she would want to interact in any way with his wife first. He forgets that his wife is there constantly. I mean, you remember at the inauguration, they did the comparison video where Obama gets out of the car, waits for Michelle, they walk up together. But him, he just gets out and walks up there, and Melania is just standing in the background. He doesn't even remember that she's there.
To be fair to him, she won't even hold his hand. So.
That's true. He doesn't have a lot of luck with handshakes recently.
Oh, look at the eyes, man. You know, so Poland has been great to Trump and here. That's already funny. It's just funny. That's all.
Look,
and then look at the look. And that little smirk, like, I'll get you. Right? That little, right? So, and to be fair to Trump, well, we'll see if that turns out to be the case. Remember, other foreign leaders have refused to shake his hand because he started that nonsense.
Because he's such a weirdo when it comes to
because he did it with Merkel. Like, he wouldn't shake her hand, and then he would try to shake other people's hands even more forcefully. So then it became a game. So when she did that, he probably thought, oh, here we go again, right? Mm. They're trying to snub me. Mm. Right. So look, he apparently demanded that there be cheering crowds in Poland for him, and they said, don't worry, we'll have that for you. Oh, that's so sad. That's so sad. Okay, but now that he feels he got snubbed, and you think he's gonna listen to anybody who tells him about etiquette afterwards? Mm-hmm. He's not gonna listen to anybody. And you know how fragile his ego is because he's a sensitive little child.
Yep.
So God help Poland.
And God help her. We don't know what he's gonna tweet about her soon.
Yeah, oh boy, I don't even wanna think about it. Okay, we gotta go, guys. When we come back, Hobby Lobby, who profess to be such great Christians, perhaps not as much. You will very much enjoy that story. And then Paul Ryan, that's probably my favorite story of the day. The American Taliban. Now that sounds like hyperbole, but wait till you hear his form of Sharia law and how he's enforcing it in the House. It's amazing. Come right back.